ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः हरिः ॐ श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः हरिः ॐ So last time we saw Bhagwan saying in verse 30, it's a description of Tat, that the one who sees me in all and all beings in me, he never gets destroyed, pranashyati. Meaning he has attained his oneness with me, because if there is such a person who sees the Lord in all and everybody in the Lord, that means he has gained his oneness with the Lord. Anyone who gains that unity, that yoga with the Lord, how can he get pranashyati? How can he get destroyed? Because the Lord is imperishable, right? So now that he has attained the oneness with him, with the Lord, there can be no destruction for him. And then Bhagwan also, 31, we saw the oneness, that the one who considers everybody to be same, the reason that this person considers everybody to be the same is because now he has gained oneness with the Lord. He has seen the unity in all. So he cannot, everybody he looks at seems like his own reflection. So he knows that they are not different. He has that sense of I in everybody. That sense of I is the one that we have in our own body. And it manifests in the form of, if our teeth bite our tongue, we don't take the teeth out or we don't scold the teeth. Why? Because there is a sense of I-ness in the tongue, but then there is a sense of I-ness in the teeth as well. Or if the finger pokes the eye, the same finger will go and rub the eye. And then we don't say, oh, I want to cut the finger off, because it's both are me. So that sort of a feeling this person gets with the entire world. Sarva bhuta sthitam yo mam sarvatha vartapmanopi sa yogi mai vartate. This, that is a yogi who has this vision, this sense of I in all. Right now, where is my sense of I? First of all, it is only with me, my own self, my body. And secondly, the closest, my own family, my children and my spouse and, you know, just the close people. We might have a little sense of I with some friends, but we will never have the sense of I with everybody. And that is what is to be achieved. So the yogi has now achieved that. Then next, he continues, Bhagwan continues with verse 32 and concludes his teaching actually. Atma upammena sarvatra samam pashyati Arjuna sukham vayadi va dukham sayogi paramo matah. He who through the likeness, sameness of the self, O Arjuna, sees equality everywhere, be it pleasure or pain, he is regarded as the highest yogi. So, me mataha, my opinion is, in my opinion, in my vision, this type of a yogi is the greatest. Now, one thing about opinion is, opinions can never be challenged, because a person has an opinion, you know, you can never challenge it. If it is a fact that is being told from somewhere, you can challenge it. How do you say that this is correct? Because it's a fact, it can be checked. But opinion is opinion. Anybody can have any kind of opinion. You cannot say it is right or wrong. It is that person's opinion. So here also Bhagwan says, it is my opinion that such a yogi is the highest yogi who through the like sameness. So samam. This word samam or samatha, I told you even before also that the first chapter, the whole problem starts with mamata, attachment. And the antidote for mamata is always samatha, equality, equanimous, being equanimous. So it is It is not just being equal, because when you say equal, then there is always two people, like I am equal to her or him. But when you have the sense of I, oneness, then there is no question of even equality. So it's a bit higher. So just the sense of oneness means if I feel hurt about something, then that person also might feel hurt, or not might, will feel hurt with that thing. If I feel happy about something, that person also might feel happy. So whatever I feel, the other person also feels, also experiences. And therefore what happens is there is a lot of compassion. So I will not do something which I know will hurt me. I will not do that to anybody else, because I think that this is what will hurt me. Then I have the same type of feeling with the others, and I will not do that. So this samatha, sameness, there are two kinds. One is the external samatha. So this is what I was talking about. The external means to other people. But then there is a samatha within, internal, which is towards our thoughts. So it's only me versus me. So it's my thoughts. And then if whatever thoughts come up, therefore he says, be it pleasure, sukham va yadi dukham va. So if a happy thought comes, I remain the same. I don't go berserk, you know, this thing. Or if I have a sad thought, I don't get depressed. So there is this sameness towards our own thoughts, looking at both kinds of thoughts. So he's given one pair of opposite. It'll include all the pairs of opposites. And then there is this external samatha towards other people. So whatever hurts me hurts the other person. Whatever makes me happy will make the other person happy. Sometimes it may not be, but it's more applicable in hurt. What hurts me hurts other people too. And then this samatha is to be maintained internally towards our own thoughts as well. And such a person who is samam, Bhagwan says he is the greatest yogi. And here Bhagwan is indicating not when the person is in a state of samadhi, is indicating a person who is living in this world. So that is what is now prompting Arjuna's question. Because of course, when a person is in samadhi, then he is not concerned with the other world. He's sort of detached from the outer world. So it's very easy to remain sama, equanimous, when the person is samadhi. What about when you are moving around in this world? Then it becomes very difficult. And this Bhagwan, this is what Bhagwan has said, that type of a yogi is most dear to me, or I consider him, it is my opinion that he is the most superior. So this is where Bhagwan concludes his teaching. But then Arjun has a question, and it's a very, very relevant question, because it totally applies to us as well. So we will read 33 and 34 together, because both the shlokas are his question. Arjuna uvacha yoyam yogastvaya proktaha samena madhusudana etasyaham na pashyami chanchalatvat stitim sthiram chanchalam himana krishna pramathi balavadridam tasyaham nigraham manne vayoriva sudushkaram. Arjun said, this yoga of equanimity taught by thee, O slayer of Madhu, I see not its enduring continuity because of the restlessness of the mind. The mind verily is, O Krishna, restless, turbulent, strong, and unyielding. I deem it quite as difficult to control as the wind. So that's in the previous verse, that's what I told you. Bhagwan was not referring to a person who is in samadhi. Bhagwan was actually referring to a person who is moving about in this world, which is now prompting this question by Arjuna. So Arjun says that, you know, this yoga of sameness or equanimity or samatha that you talked about, prokta, samena, madhusudana, madhu and Kaitabha were two demons who came out of the years of Lord Vishnu. The story is from Durga Puran. And they were two demons and they wanted to eat Vishnu only. They wanted to kill Bhagwan Vishnu only. So Bhagwan Vishnu had to battle with them. And it is said that the battle went on for 5,000 years before Bhagwan Vishnu could kill them. Now, the story seems really kind of, what's such a big deal? And why 5,000 years for Bhagwan to kill him? What the significance is that, see, it is said that they came out of the years. What happens to us is generally we will form opinions by listening to other people. Like X is talking about Y, and when X is saying something bad about Y, then my mind also gets tainted. And not only that my mind gets tainted, I go and tell it to 10 other people that, you know, Y is so and so. And therefore, that's why it is said that they came out of the dirt of Karana Mala, you know, the dirt of the years of Bhagwan Vishnu. So when we hear things, the point is that what we hear, we must not tell other people. If we means we must make our own opinion. That is what it is. And when we form an opinion based on what some X person is telling us, then it is very difficult to get to eradicate that opinion. And therefore, the best thing is, that's why Gurudev used to say, we've got 2 years, you know, most of the things we should hear by 1 year and let out by the other year and not even pay attention to it. And only things that should be paid attention to should be maintained. And then that should enter from the ear and go into the heart. And that's why it is symbolically said that it took 5,000 years for Bhagwan Vishnu to kill them. Means for us, when we hear things, first is best is not to hear anything. But then what happens is sometimes you're just in a position or in a place where people come and tell you things. So when anybody tells us, then we must try and not pay too much attention to it. Like form your own opinion. That is what I'm saying. I'm not saying, you know, that ignore it, but don't base your judgment on that. So X has told you about Y. Now, if Y approaches you, well, you're like, no, you're in your mind, you're thinking, oh, X told me all about you. I don't want to be even near you. But make your own judgment, okay? So that is the significance of that word Madhusudana. Sudana is to kill. And Madhu is the demon. But because of Madhu and Kaitabha, those are the two demons that he killed. He got the name Madhusudana. Bhagwan Vishnu or Shri Krishna got the name Madhusudana. Now, etasyaham na pashyami. I do not see this yoga of sameness happening. I mean, maybe it is possible when the person is in samadhi. If I'm in samadhi, yes, it is possible. But for me, like who is moving about in this world, it is not possible because chanchalatvat asthitim sthiram. So two things Arjun is saying. One is chanchal and one is asthira. I told you the two meanings. Chanchala means where the mind is jumping from one to another topic, and asthira means the topic is the same, but it is jumping within the topic itself. The mind is jumping. Means in both cases, mind is very, very fickle. Okay, so he's given two, chanchal and asthira. Then he gives chanchalam hi mana Krishna. Now he gives four more. Chanchalam is there. Krishna pramati. Krishna, the word Krishna comes from the root Krish. Krish is to attract. Okay. So when he attracts you, then you are uprooted from something else. You know, when we get attracted to something, then some other thing we are getting distracted from. Okay. So therefore Krishna is the one who takes away. Because he's takes away means he's taking you away from the world because he's attracting you to himself. So that is what it means. Pramathi is another one. And first, chanchal is fickle. Pramathi is violent. From, you know, like the violent storms. When we are young and, you know, we want something, then we become like a child will throw a tantrum, right? And he'll cry. So the mind is becoming very violent because the child wants it and wants it now, immediately. Balavad is strong. Dridam is obstinate, means it doesn't listen. It's basically, if you can think about small children. You know, like in the superstore, you see I've seen kids rolling on the floor and crying, literally, right? That is what this is now. Because the mind is obstinate, it is very strong, the child's mind, and it's becoming very violent because he's asking for some candy and mom is saying no, and this thing. So that sort of a thing, it's happening to adults also. I mean, happening with children is one thing, but it happens to adults also. Tasyaham nigraham mane vayoriva sudushkram. So to nigra, to control this type of a mind, which is, first of all, it is fickle, it is restless, it is violent, it is strong, and it is so obstinate. So there are five things that Arjuna has given, and all of them apply to us. If we just look at our own mind, none of this we can deny. Not that every single moment the mind is like that, but we have experienced the fickleness of the mind. We have experienced the restlessness of the mind. Mind becomes very restless, agitated. Mind is very strong. It pulls you towards things that you should not be doing, or it pulls you away from things that you should do. You know, like exercise, you know, and then the mind is like, it's okay, let's sleep in, and you know, that sort of thing. So because of these, the mind being like this, Arjuna is saying, I think it is very difficult. It is as difficult as trying to control the wind. This is what he's saying. Vayoho eva sudushkaram. Very difficult. Just like you're trying to control the wind and you can't, and the mind is like that. So this is what Arjun has questioned. Now Bhagwan is replying. The best way to disagree is to agree. You know? So Bhagwan agrees with him. And why won't he? Because the mind is like that. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Asaushayam Mahabaho Mano Durnigraham Chalam Abhyasena Tu Kaunteya Vairagena Cha Grihyate. The Blessed Lord said, undoubtedly, O mighty armed, the mind is difficult to control and is restless. But by practice, O son of Kunti, and by dispassion, it is restrained. So the Bhagwan is using the word Mahabahu for Arjun, a little bit of sarcasm in there, meaning Mahabahu means mighty armed. So Bhagwan is trying to tell him, oh mighty armed soldier, it is very easy. You are called mighty armed because you have won over all your enemies throughout your life. So Bhagwan is saying to control external enemies, it's extremely easy, but it is not easy to control the mind. So a real Mahabaho is one who would control the mind. So that's why there's a little bit of taunt, sarcasm in Bhagwan calling him Mahabaho at this juncture, because where he's saying that I cannot control the mind. Yeah, you can control thousands of enemy soldiers. You can control your own soldiers, and you can't control your own mind. Then what kind of a Mahabaho are you? So a little bit of a sarcasm. Then asaushayam, undoubtedly Arjun, I agree that the mind is all these things. He says, you're very, very right that mano dur nigraham chalam, it is extremely difficult to control the mind because it is, you know, it is very restless, it is turbulent, it is violent, it is obstinate, all of that I agree. But to abhyasena tu kaunteya vairagena chagre. So two methods Bhagwan is now giving. One is abhyasa, which is practice, and the second is vairagya, which is dispassion. So this abhyasa, practice, so practice is a verb. So this abhyasa refers to actually hatha yoga. And the way to control the mind through hatha yoga is by pranayama. Now, the actual pranayama, which is the rechaka, the puraka, the kumbhaka, etc., must never ever be practiced without the guidance of a guru. Okay? But a simpler type of pranayama, which Bhagwan Raman Maharshi has given or other masters have given, is known as pranavikshana. Pranavikshana means observation of breath. Now, that is very simple. That you don't need a master. Means what? You just observe, Updeshsar actually, Bhagwan Raman Maharshi has said, you just watch the breath going up and down, in and out, in and out, in and out. There is the reason that control of the pranas, control of the breath, controls the mind is because there is a connection between the two. They are connected. And And we can see that a person who is fast asleep, you will see how regulated his breath is, how calm the breath is. Why? Because the mind is completely folded. As opposed to a person who is very angry or who has become very emotional, then his breathing is going to be very, very fast automatically. Not that he's doing it, but it automatically is. So we know that there is a connection between the mind and the pranas. And this Hatha Yoga, this practice of pranayama or pranavikshana even, will control the chanchalam, the fickleness of the mind, because it will become calm. What is fickle? Fickle means the mind is not calm. It's this minute it's here, this minute it's there, this minute it's there. So it's jumping. But when you regulate it, like in deep sleep where the mind is folded. So when you're awake, when you control the pranas, it will also control the mind. So the first two, chanchalam and asthiram, will be taken care of this abhyasa of pranayama. Okay. And then the next is vairagya, dispassion. Now, in control of the mind, there is one which is a forceful control. Okay. And other one is a gradual control. Now, this vairagya falls under the gradual control. And vairagya dispassion is by, explaining to the mind that the world is, there is no happiness in the world. Like a child, exactly like we would do a child. You know, either you can just, just shut up, don't cry, and slap him across the face or hit him, or some moms will pick them up, they'll put them in the buggy or they put them in the car and tie the seatbelt, and okay, now we're going home, enough is enough. So that is a forceful control. But the other type of control is, okay, let us see, you want this, but it's not good for you, it's not, maybe we cannot afford it or whatever. So by explaining to the child that this is not good, then the child will also calm down. So with the mind also, there is this same two methods. One is a forceful control, but the forceful control is extremely difficult, and forceful control is valid only temporarily. Like temporarily it will work, and then some other time then the mind is going to come up with twice the force. Whereas a gradual control, which is vairagya. So the next three out of the five. First was chanchalam, asthiram, and then this balavad, so strong, obstinate, and violent. These three things, these three disturbances in the mind will be controlled by vairagya, dispassion. And for dispassion, we have already seen that there has to be viveka, discrimination. So that is the path of knowledge. First two, path of Hatha Yoga, Raja Yoga or Hatha Yoga, which is from Patanjali's Yoga Sutra. So that's why it's practice, you do something. Whereas Vairagya falls under Jnana. There's nothing to do. It is only to explain to the mind that what it is asking for is not right for you that way. So that is the knowledge aspect. And in Abhyasa, it is the practice aspect. So you're practicing the breathing. With vairagya, there are three words that we know. One is dana, charity. Then one is tyaga, which is renunciation. And then one is vairagya. So this dana, when I do charity, when I suppose I give money to whoever, to the mission, So in dana, what is happening is, see, I have money and I know that this money is valuable, and I also think that the charity that I'm giving it to also has value for it. You understand? So the value of that object is maintained. I have a value for my money. I have earned it. It's my hard-earned money. And I think that the other charity can make use of it. So they have value for that money too. So the value of that object is maintained in dana, in charity. In tyaga is like, I have no value for the object, and the classic example is when Salvation Army or Big Brothers or somebody phones me, and then they say, oh, do you have any old clothes or household items? And I say, oh, you know, old clothes, I have no value for this now. I don't like this anymore. I don't fit into this anymore. They are too old for me. Old fashioned, whatever reason, I have no value on it. So I do tyaga. I renounce that. But I say that, oh, but you know, some poor person can wear it. So what I'm doing is the value is maintained on the other side. So I know that Salvation Army will make money, or Diabetes Association will make money, and somebody will get money. I have no value for it, but the other entity does. But in vairagya and dispassion, the thought process is I have no value for it, and neither does anybody else. So those are the three gradations. So this is what Bhagwan is saying, that vairagya has to be developed. The other method of developing vairagya is doing pratipaksha bhavana. There is a term. Pratipaksha bhavana means seeing all the negative in that particular thing. So, you know, say you want to eat, you want to like maybe not exercise, or you want to sleep in, then you say, oh, if I don't exercise, then I might put on weight, or I might, my blood sugar might go up. So you see the negative side in that particular thing, or I want something, you know, and then you say, okay, you want it. Then what are you going to do with it? Where are you going to keep it? Do you have the place for it? Do you have any use for it? You just like it. You think, oh, this is so cute, and therefore you want to buy it. So that is what is pratipaksha bhavana. So when you constantly do pratipaksha bhavana, if you think constantly, do I really need this thing, or do I just want it? And why do I want it then? Like, just so that people think, oh, I've got a big car or a big house, or just because for people or what. So that is what is meant by pratipaksha bhavana. So when we have this, when we engage in pratipaksha bhavana constantly, most of the things we will not even buy or take or whatever. You know, you think, okay, why? Think about it. Do I really need this thing? What am I going to do with it? And if you really need it, of course you go for it. Go buy it. There's no this thing. The other thing about this abhyasa, practice, see, practice can never be done in one day. Practice it. That's why it's called practice. So practice is, there are two aspects to practice. One is dirgha kala. So long term, you have to do the same thing, and you have to do the same thing in a disciplined manner. So long term, but not like you do it today and then next practice you do after 8 days. Not like that. Every single day, repeatedly for a long time, when you do something, then it falls under abhyasa, okay, under practice. Then that is called as practice. So practice is not when you do one day and then next 4 days you don't do. Then again, you think, oh, today I have time. Let me just do this. Not that sort of a thing. So when he prescribes practice, when he says practice Bhagwan, it means every single day you have to practice. Every single day, every single situation, you have to practice pratipaksha bhavana. Okay? So that is what is meant by abhyasa. So every day, disciplined life. Like you get into a discipline that I'm going to do whichever, you know, read one verse, read something, that sort of thing. Depending on how much time you can give, depending on your state of in life. Okay, now actually he's giving the definition of abhyasa. Asamyatatmana yogo dushprapa iti mematihi vashyatmana tu yatata shakyo vapnum upayataha. Again, mematihi, so my mati, my opinion. Yoga, I think, is hard to be attained by one of uncontrolled self, but the self-controlled striving can obtain it by proper means. So this yoga, this abhyasa, that's what he's saying, that one, the yoga of sameness, he says the one who practices, strives hard, can definitely get it. But if he's striving, but his mind is not controlled, then still he can't get it. Okay, you can't just strive and then the mind is just totally uncontrolled. That doesn't work. Or if the mind is controlled and you don't strive for it, mind is controlled, but you're not even looking for that goal, then again, it is not going to be possible. And if the mind is not controlled and if you're not striving for it, how can it come? Forget it, can't come. So there are two things. Mind has to be controlled and the striving has to go on. So the abhyasa has to go on. At the same time, the mind also has to be controlled. Okay. Now, one thing I'll tell you that as you practice whatever certain disciplines, automatically the mind starts coming under control. So if you decide that every single day at this time, I'm going to do some reading or do some exercise or do whatever is any discipline, you know, then the after some time, it's like, you know, at 4 o'clock you start drinking tea. After third day, you're like, if it's four, you look at the time and say, oh, it's tea time. Same way, this practice you keep doing and the mind itself will then start telling you that it's time to do this because this is what you have decided. So that discipline has to be maintained. This is what Bhagwan is saying. So Bhagwan tells him that abhyasa in vairagya, this mind which is very fickle and strong, obstinate, violent, restless, can be controlled by practice and can be controlled by vairagya, dispassion. Okay, so Bhagwan says, yes, you're right, but there is a method to control it, nevertheless. Now Arjun has another question. Ayati Shraddhayopetaha Yoga Chalita Manasaha Aprapya Yoga Sausiddhim Kam Gatim Krishna Gachati Kashchid no bhaya vibhrashtam chinna brahmiva nashyati apratishtho mahabaho vimudho brahmana pati etanme saushayam krishna chetu marhasya sheshatah twadanya saushayasyasya chetana yupapadyate. He who, though possessed of faith, is unable to control himself, whose mind wanders away from yoga, to what end does he, having failed to attain perfection in yoga, go, O Krishna? Fallen from both, does he not, O mighty armed, perish like a rent cloud, supportless and deluded in the path of Brahman? This doubt of mine, O Krishna, please dispel completely because it is not possible for anyone but you to dispel this doubt. So in three verses, Arjun has posed a question. Basically, what he's saying is that, okay, Bhagwan, suppose there is a person who has the faith in what you're saying. He has the faith. You said abhyasa, practice, and we said practices like for a long period of time. He has to, he practices and he's practicing, but in between, he falls short. Now, the thing is that in between he falls short, there can be several reasons for that. One is he could just suddenly die, right? Nobody knows when death is coming. So he's practicing. This person is practicing and, you know, he's doing it. But now suddenly he died. Now what to do? Okay. So that's one reason. Second reason is the person might live long enough, but, you know, after, like, suppose he goes into his 90s, now the body is not allowing him to do. That is also possible. So what happens is the person would like to sit and read, would like to follow a certain discipline, but now the body is no longer supporting, right? So if the person is, say, used to getting up early in the morning and doing meditation, now can't even wake up in the morning. Like that can also happen. So then what happens is that practice has now gone away. Means he has not reached the ultimate. This, he is not talking about a person who has reached that yoga which Bhagwan talked about, but the person has, having faith, is practicing, but he did. And the third thing is, because we see that in the mission, people come to the mission for a long time and then suddenly they just drop out and there is no really real rhyme or reason. Something rubs them the wrong way. Generally, it is, of course, a matter of ego, because then the ego is hurt. What happens is they have heard it, but somehow it has not made any difference internally. There's one thing, very, very important thing about this knowledge is that we have to hear it, but it has to start making a difference somewhere inside. inside within us. So we are our own judge. So unless that internal change happens, then after a while, we are not going to stay with this knowledge. If the internal change happens, we will want to know even more and more and more. Okay, so this is what Arjun is asking. In the spiritual ladder, they say there are about 7 steps. The first step is discrimination. Vivek is very, very important. That is the first step. Means we have to have the discrimination that this is the path for me. This is the correct path. This is what I want to follow. That is the first discrimination that we have to have. If you don't have that, we are not even going to follow. Just yesterday, actually, I met a couple, new couple. I said, where do you live? And they live in West Vancouver. And the lady said that she has met Gurudev, Puja Gurudev, etc., etc. And I said, we have classes in Vancouver and Burnaby. And, I don't know if that's far. So then it turns out that to learn Carnatic music, they come all the way from West Vancouver. I mean, I know you guys don't know Vancouver, but anyway, West Vancouver and Surrey is pretty far. It's far, right? Now, because the gentleman is interested in Carnatic music from West Vancouver all the way, taking the freeway, he's coming into this another suburb of Vancouver called Surrey. Long distance. Okay. So that's what I told him. I said, the driving doesn't matter. It depends on how much interest you have. If you have interest in this knowledge, then you will drive for whatever distance, right? For Carnatic music, he's driving that much. But for this, he may or may not drive. I don't know. I told him, you start coming in January. We are going to close now. You see how you like it. And that's what I also told them. I said, very frankly, I said, you need a lot of... One thing I will tell you for sure, 100%, if you're even slightly interested in this knowledge, know that it is grace. If there is no grace, there will be no interest in the knowledge at all. So I told them, I said, you have to come and find out if you have the grace. And you start attending and then people... So I've seen people come to my class and then they attend for a period of time and then they just don't attend. So... for whatever reason, this is the question that he's asking. So the 7 steps in spiritual evolution is, first is Viveka. Second is when you have the discrimination that this is the path for me, then there will be Shravana and Manana. So listening, finding a guru or a book or a tape and listening and then reflecting upon what is heard would be the second stage. Then the third would be Nididhyasana, meditation. And the fourth is Samadhi. And then 5, 6, and 7, they are only higher levels of Samadhi. Okay. So these are the 7 levels. Now, once you reach stage 4, fall is not possible. Once, if you get to that stage of Samadhi, then what you will do, and this is exactly what happened with Raman Maharshi, at the age of 16, he got into that fourth stage, Samadhi, and then he never looked back. He just went off, and he wanted to experience that bliss more. And because it is said that it is such a blissful state, such a blissful experience state, those are not the words to be used, but just for your understanding, that everything else you will just give up. That is what. So from this 4, 5, 6, and 7, a person cannot fall, but up to Nididhyasana, up to that stage of meditation, the person can fall. So that is the person that now here Arjun is talking about. Okay, he's not talking about a person who has reached the final, because there Bhagwan has already said once he experiences that oneness with me, he can never fall. Name Pranashati said, my devotees then never fall. So that is not what Arjun is talking about. He's talking about up to 3, level 3 in the spiritual progress. And I told you the reasons for fall can be whatever. It can be death, it can be old age, and it can be just really, honestly, God knows. I really don't know why people just don't then, or maybe... for whatever reason. Anyway, and in 38, what he gives an example, he says, like a cloud, will they just disappear? All that practices that has been done, will it all just be gone? And then In 39, Arjuna is saying, I think that you're the only one that can answer this, and therefore please clarify my doubt. Okay, so that is the question in the three verses. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Partha Naiveha Namutra Vinashastasya Vidyate Nahi Kalyana Krit Kashchida Durgatim Tat Gachati. The Blessed Lord said, O Partha, neither in this world nor in the next world is there destruction for him, none verily, who strives to do good, O my son, ever comes to grief. The word Tata, Durgatim Tat Gachit. Tat word is a very unique word in Sanskrit. It means son. It can mean brother. It means father also. It means disciple also. It can mean anything. Of course, here, oh dear one also. Tat they use also for when they want to address as oh dear one. So, oh son, Tata, oh my son. Here, Gurudev is translated as oh my son. Okay, but Tat, sometimes we have in Upanishad, the son is calling the father Tata. So it's, you know, dear one. So if you say dear one, it can be brother, can be dear, father can be dear, son can be dear. So this Tata word refers to everything. Anyway, what Bhagwan is saying is a person who has started on that path with faith, even though that practice might be left halfway, he will never, that practice goes nowhere. Let's put it that way. So what happens is basically that in the following birth, he will pick up the thread from where he left. That is the universal law that nahi kalyana krit kashchida, ever can this practice go waste. So whatever little practice or more practice or medium practice, whatever amount of practice that a person may have done, and now that that practice has come to an end, for whatever reason, he doesn't have to worry. Means he is never going to be dissipated like a cloud. Okay. Partha, referring to pa is Paramatma and Artha is wealth. So Partha is one who is looking for the wealth of Paramatma, who is searching for the wealth of Paramatma. Partha. So Partha comes also from Prithu. Son of Prithu is Partha. So if when we take Prithu was the grandfather. Pritha was Kunti's name because her father's name was Prithu, King Prithu. So she was Pritha, and because she was Pritha, and Partha can mean all the five brothers then. All her sons would be Partha. Here Bhagwan is addressing Arjun as Partha. Okay. So in this world nor in the next world, means whichever world he goes to, if he goes into the heavens, if he goes into wherever he goes, or he will come back he never does he come to grief, means it is not wasted. All the good that he has done, it will never ever get wasted. Then what happens to him? This is what Bhagwan is now explaining. Prapya punya kritam lokan ushitva shashvati samaha shuchi nam shrimatam gehe yoga brashto bhijayate. Having attained to the worlds of the righteous and having dwelt there for everlasting long years, he who had fallen from yoga is born again in the house of the pure and the wealthy. Now, these people who have fallen from yoga can be of two kinds. Okay. This is why Bhagwan is now making the distinction here. So what are the two kinds? One kind is the one who is practicing yoga, but all his desires are not fulfilled. All his vasanas are not exhausted. So he is practicing this yoga, but you know, there are some desires in the mind, and now he has fallen from that practice for whatever reason. Then for him, what happens to him is he gets birth in a rich family, a wealthy family, but a family which is very conducive to spiritual practices. One example, when I was reading this verse, one example that came to my mind is the Birla family. See, the Birla family is, everybody knows, extremely rich. But they, in Calcutta, they have their Birla house, big house. Every quarter. So four times a year for 1 week, they invite some Mahatma will be there. Not just in December 1 to 7, Gurudev always was in Calcutta, and so was Guruji, Swami Tejomanji. I've not looked at Swami Swarupanandji's. Yeah, but that was, that December first week was reserved for Chinmay Mission Swamis. So in Birla House, they always have, like in Calcutta, for every 3 months, there is 1 week. And during that time, the ladies of the house, they say that, I've heard this from Swamiji's who were with Gurudev when Gurudev used to go. They said other time they may not even lift a glass of water, but when Swamiji was there, they did everything for Swamiji. The servants were, you know, bearer, you know, I imagine they must be having. So idea is that they are a rich and wealthy family, but they are also spiritually inclined. So a person whose desires are still there will get birth in that sort of a family. Okay, this is what he's saying. Yogo Brashto Abhijayate. So he will be born again. Okay, because why? Because he has not attained that samadhi, that final yoga he has not attained. So birth is for sure. So then what happens is, because there are some desires pending in his mind, he will get birth in a family where those desires can be fulfilled. But that family will be pure and wealthy. So they're very spiritually inclined. Athava. Or this is where the Bhagwan is making the distinction between, because I told you there is one fallen from yoga who has desires and one who has fallen from yoga, but he has no desires. Now what happens to the one who has no desires? And this is what Bhagwan is saying in verse 42. Athava yoginam eva kule bhavati dhimatam etadvidurlabhataram loke janmayadidrisham. Or he is even born in the family of the wise yogis. Verily, a birth like this is very difficult to obtain in this world. So here the example is Sant Jnaneshwar. Sant Jnaneshwar was born to a sannyasi, and all the people shunned them, and they didn't even have food to eat. So a person who has no desires, but who has done this yoga and fallen from yoga, will get birth in a family which is poor, but extremely rich in spiritual practices. And therefore we have Swami Mitrananda in our, this thing, whose mother just, when the child was born, she just gave that child to Gurudev. She put him in Gurudev's lap and she said, Gurudev, he's yours. Right? So that is the type of birth that this person will get, because he has done yoga also, and at the same time he has gained dispassion also. So there is not that many desires left in his mind. So that way, this type of a family he will get. Okay? So Arjun's question is, what happens to a person who has fallen from yoga? I told you, fallen from yoga means only up to Nididhyasana. If he goes into samadhi, he can never fall. So from Nididhyasana, he has fallen. Okay, what are the reasons? Whatever, it could be death, it could be old age, it could be any other reason. Don't know, whatever reason. Okay, then these, Bhagwan is now classifying these, Arjun never classified them, but Bhagwan is only classifying, saying that those who have still those desires left will be born in a wealthy family which is spiritually inclined. Those who do not have the desires will be born in a poor family, but they will be spiritually extremely rich. So that way, idea is that in any case, that person then will pick up that thread from wherever he left. Like, it's like he was in grade 5, then he'll go in grade 6 next year. Next birth, he will pick up the thread from there. So idea is that whatever practices that we do in this life, know that they will not go to waste. We may not feel, see, sometimes we get frustrated. We say, oh, I'm doing so much, but I don't see any results. That's why this is the hope. Don't feel frustrated. It is like you're collecting it in the punya bank. You know, your merits are being collected, and they will fructify at some later stage. Okay, either in this life itself or in the next birth. It is, we have to learn to see the blessings in everything, you know. So when things happen, learn to recognize those. All right. Now, तत्र तं बुद्धि संयोगं लभते पौर्वदेहिकं यतते च ततो भूयः संसिद्धौ कुरु नन्दन. Now this 43 verse is referring to verse 42. There he comes to be united. So it's a continuation of 42. What happened? Loke janma yadidrisham. So the one who has no desires, who has fallen from yoga, takes birth athava yogina meva kule bhavati dhimatam. He gets birth in a very wise family. And here wise means we don't mean intelligent who is, or everybody has done PhD, not like that. Those who are very, very spiritually inclined. So the spiritual practices for this person start right from the beginning, because he's just born. The parents are already doing it, so he will also. Then he, there what happens? Tatra tam. So there he, there in that family, buddhi sanyogam labhate parva vedekam. Buddhi sanyogam means he gets united with the higher. That there he comes to be united with the knowledge acquired in his former body and strives more than before for perfection, O son of the Kurus. Kuru Nandanas, O son of the Kurus. Nandana, the joy, the delight of the Kurus. Raghu Nandana is there for Rama, Sri Rama. Kuru Nandana for Arjuna. He says, there in that poor family, but which, one which is spiritually very, very rich, he will start his practices right from his childhood, because the parents are already doing it. So obviously he will also do it. And then he will become united with the knowledge that he had acquired in his previous birth. Okay, so this is what happens to him. What happens in a rich family to a person who has desires is, it's a little bit tricky, because that person could actually fall. See, while fulfilling the desires that are there, he could start cultivating even more desires, and there is a chance of fall again for him. So the practices are there because of which he got the birth, but his present actions are not conducive to that. Whereas the one who is born in a poor family, he, and previously also he had no desires, now there's no question of full, and right from the beginning there is no question of distractions here and there, because the parents are also in that, so he's in that right from the beginning. And so it might, you know, be, he might, this person will have probably a better chance of gaining this perfection. All right. पूर्वाभ्यासेन ते नैव रियते यव, sorry, रियते यव शोपि सह जिज्ञासुरपि योगस्य शब्द ब्रह्माति वर्तते. By that very former practice, he is born on in spite of himself. Even he who merely wishes to know yoga goes beyond the Shabd Brahman. So, again, continuation of the previous verse. How Gurudev has written, how can one get united with the intelligence acquired in his former embodiment? Because of that practice. That practice, I told you that whatever practices that we do, they never go wasted. They remain with us. And so they will then act as... see, suppose if you're walking or running, you know, now the wind, especially in Vancouver, very windy city, the wind can be on your back or the wind can come from the front. So suppose if you're running in one direction and the wind is behind you, then that wind is actually giving you momentum as well. It is actually pushing you towards the direction in which you're running, right? So this is what is meant here, that that practice from previous birth will actually goad you, will actually push you into more and more rigorous practices in this life. That is what they'll do. They'll act like a wind in your favor. They won't be like a wind coming from the opposite direction where you have to fight the wind to run. So this is what will happen. And this is how he will go beyond this Shabd Brahman. Okay, so beyond the words, beyond the practice, because we have to go beyond everything to reach that oneness, right? So this is what he says. Bhagwan is saying that that practice will then help him reach the goal beyond. Ativartate is to go beyond beyond words means into the non-dual samadhi, basically. All right. Now,
prayatnadyatmanastu yogi saushuddha kilbishaha aneka janma sausiddha tato yati param gatim.
But the yogi who strives with assiduity, purified from sins and perfected gradually through many births, then attains the highest goal. So here now Bhagwan is saying that the one who keeps on practicing, this is what means he is striving in the right direction, and not just for one birth or two births, for many, many, many births. It is said that Gautam Buddha, once he attained Nirvana, he looked back like into his own past lives, and he said that he had taken 500 births when he attained, right? So this is what Bhagwan is saying. It doesn't happen overnight. I mean, if you see it happening overnight for somebody, then know that that many previous births they have done practice. Or if you see it happening in this life for anybody, we have seen Gurudev, we have seen Swami Vivekananda, Nisargadatt Maharaj, Tapon Maharaj, all these realized masters, Raman Maharshi, Ramakrishna Paramhansa and all that. So we say, oh, how come it happened for them and it's not happening for me? It's because previous births, they have done a lot more practice than we have. That is what it is. And this is what Bhagwan is saying, that this perfection is achieved over many, many lives. It is not an overnight thing. So, it takes time. So, we have to keep on practicing. We have to keep up the abhyasa, and we have to keep on developing that dispassion. Yati param gatim, param is supreme, gatim is goal here. So, the supreme goal is one which is a point of no return. That must be understood. So, point of no return is when the subtle body is completely destroyed for once and for all. See, what happens is when we have desires in the mind, the subtle body is not destroyed. The death is the separation of the subtle body from the gross body. Now, when the subtle body separates, it doesn't go anywhere. Why? Because there are so many desires to be fulfilled. So the subtle body, the jivatma, that is what's called, jivatma. So there is the subtle body along with the presence of consciousness, of course, because consciousness is all pervading. Don't think that consciousness is not there. So the subtle body along with the supreme consciousness, which is together known as jivatma, will go on searching for another body to fulfill its desires. So therefore, it doesn't become param gatim. Death, physical death, is not param gatim for all. For some, it will be. For very few, those who have realized that highest oneness, state of oneness with the Lord, for them it will be param gatim. It will be the final death. That's it. No more coming back. No more rebirth. But for us, it wouldn't be param gatim. It would just be gone and then coming back sooner or later, depending on the kind of vasanas that we have harbored. So this is what we need to see. Now, sau shuddha kilbish, kilbish again, impurities. And impurities is in the form for us, in the form of vasanas, the V in the chart, means what we are doing is while reacting in this world, we tend to create more and more vasanas. And that itself is becoming kilbisha. Because that kilbisha, that impurity, is what is now creating another birth for us. So the point to watch out here in this life is, how is my interaction with the world? Because what is coming to us, whatever situations, persons, and objects that come to us, we have no control over them. They have been preordained by our past karmas. Okay, so we have no control. So there is no point worrying about what is going to happen tomorrow, whether this will happen, that will happen. There is really no point worrying about it. What we can worry about is how I'm going to react to this particular, any situation which will come to me. Okay, and we cannot just live in an imaginary world. This situation come, then I'll do this. Not like that. We don't do that. Day to day. Being in the now, that is the whole thing about Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle. So in the now, what is the situation? What is the object? What is the person that I have to face? Okay, so, and then how am I going to face it? So to maintain this saushuddha kilbisha means to purify this impurities, our vasanas, we have to make sure that we don't create more vasanas. It is because of our own vasanas that we have gathered over many, many births that this situation comes to us. Okay, now I have to get rid of that vasana. So to get rid of that vasana, I have to bear that situation without any complaints. So in happiness, I don't go. That's therefore Bhagwan always talks about this sama yoga. Even in chapter 2, he said sukha dukhe same krutva. So this word sama will come many more times. It will come in further chapters. So it's constantly remaining equanimous in all situations. And the only way we can remain equanimous is by accepting the situation. See, the reason we cannot remain equanimous is we don't accept the situation or whatever that has come to us, right? Because there is a difference in what is and what should be. So what should be is a very warm, you know, temperature and no snow, no cloud, no rain. That should be. But what is? There is cloud, there is rain, there is snow, there is cold. Everything that doesn't fall under what should be is in what is. What we are trying to do is we are fighting for that what should be. And we are neglecting the what is. Because constantly mind is now agitated. It is snowing, but I think that it should not snow. It is raining, but I think that it should not rain. It is cold, but I think that it should be very, very warm. So constantly I am in that battle. Give up that battle. Give up that battle. So when you give that up, then what you're doing is you're accepting what is. What is, because nothing you can do to the what is. There's nothing you can do. Okay. So when you accept that what is, then these vasanas will start thinning slowly, slowly. Because thinning in the sense, whatever vasanas are there is getting exhausted from the past because that situation has come. You have gone through the situation. But while going through the situation, you have remained sama, you have remained equanimous, you have maintained your equipoise. So a new vasana has not been created. And that is the whole purpose of this life, is that every situation comes, you accept. Okay, and not that you don't do it. Suppose if God forbid an illness comes, yes, you go to the doctor, you take medication. We are not saying don't do that, but don't get agitated. Don't keep thinking, why should I have gotten this? Why my neighbor doesn't have it? Why did I only get it? Why don't fight. This is how you can take care of this saushuddha kilbishaha. So constantly practicing, how is my interaction with the world? Okay, is it such that I am exhausting the vasanas that I have already accumulated? Or is it such that while exhausting the vasanas, because vasanas are constantly getting exhausted, know that. Because that vasana is bringing us this situation, so that vasana is getting exhausted. Okay, somewhere along the line. Now, only point that I have to keep thinking about is, am I creating more vasanas while exhausting this vasana? That part I have to worry about and try not to create new vasanas. So when a situation of my liking comes, I must not worry when it will go away and what will happen to me when it goes away. I shouldn't worry about that. If I do, then I'm creating more vasanas for it. Okay? Or if a situation that I don't like, something I don't like comes to me, I must not say, why did it come only to me? When will it go away? I hope it never comes again. Those type of things should be avoided. All right? Now, Bhagwan, finally, he's concluding. Tapasvibhyodhiko yogi jnanibhyopi matodhikaha karmibhyaschadiko yogi Tasmad yogi bhavarjuna. The yogi is thought to be superior to the ascetics and even superior to men of knowledge, mere studies. He is also superior to men of action. Therefore, you strive to be a yogi, O Arjuna. So, what he's saying is he is now glorifying yogi. Now, here yogi is one who has controlled his mind. Know that he is not talking of a yogi who has reached samadhi. That is then, that's a totally different this thing. Then that they are in a totally different category, the realized masters. We are not talking of realized masters. We are talking about you and me. Is our mind under our control or is the mind controlling me? So he's saying the one whose mind is under his own control, because that is what he said. That is what Arjun said, right? Mind is very difficult to control. He said Abhyas and Vairagya will give that control. So he says, in his opinion, once again, he gives mato, api mato dhika adhika, my mata it is, this is my opinion, that he is greater than the tapasvi. Tapasvi, tapas is penance. Okay, so a penance is what? When I give up something that I like, right? So if I decide to do fast once a week, that is tapas. If I say that, oh, my exams are coming, I will not watch movies for a month, that is tapas. Or if I say I'm not going to eat out for a month, that is tapas. So anything which I like, but I'm giving up voluntarily, okay, not under force, under duress. I myself, self-disciplined. So self-imposed discipline. That is, tapas means if I'm used to getting up late and if I say no, from tomorrow onwards, I am going to get up early, first thing in the morning, 5 o'clock, 5:30, that becomes tapas. So all this falls under tapas. And tapas will give control of the mind. Tapas will give, because you see why? Because now I have decided that I'm not going to watch movies, or I'm not going to eat sweet for a month, or I'm not going to watch movies, or I'm not going to go for parties, then automatically the mind is listening, right? So if I follow that and I have imposed it myself, then the mind is coming under control. So the one who is striving, tapasvi, the one who is doing tapas, Bhagwan says, the one who has already controlled his mind, in my opinion, is superior, obviously, because the goal has been reached, okay? Not only that, Jnanibhyo, the one who are doing mere studies. Huh? So here, Jnani must not be taken. That's why I said, we are not talking of a person or man of realization, where Jnani is, you already gained the knowledge. No, not like that. The one who is studying, like us, actually. We are Jnanis. Most of the people think this is Jnana Yoga only that we are studying. So whatever, I'm doing a lot of reading, this, that, etc. But my mind is not under control. So then I fly off the handle at a little, you know, unfavorable situation. I'm unhappy. I'm agitated. I'm reading. I'm doing my reading, doing my studying, but I'm like that. So then Bhagwan says, no. Then in my opinion, the one, he may not be studying, but if he's kept his mind under control, means he has got the essence of this. What is the essence of studying all this? Keeping the mind under control. If he has already kept the mind under control without studying, then he's superior to me. Whether he's studying or not studying, his mind is superior. Then karmebhyaschadhiko yogi, karma yoga, one who is doing karma. Now, also karma yoga is helping in control of the mind. The same like tapas, you know, so with tapas, karma yoga is when you're doing work with a particular, we have seen in chapter 3, with a particular attitude. Every single work to be done with a special attitude, right? So when you're doing that, also you're trying to control the mind. There also the mind, the idea is to purify the mind. A purified mind is a controlled mind. The more purified the mind becomes, the more under control will it come. Know that for sure. If the mind is turbulent, you know, all those things that Arjun talked about, chanchal, asthira, balva, dridam, Pramathi, all those descriptions are of an impure mind. The impure mind will exhibit those type of traits. So Bhagwan is saying here is that from karma yoga, most superior to, in my opinion, is the man of man who has controlled, a person who has controlled his or her mind. And therefore, tasma, therefore, yogi bhava Arjuna, you become a yogi, you become a man of controlled mind and intellect. Okay, of course, intellect not to be controlled, mind to be controlled. So this is what Bhagwan has is actually finally now concluded, given all answers to Arjun's questions. And now he introduces the next chapter as is his style. So in 47, he says, Yogi namapi sarvesham madgate nantaratmana shraddhavan bhajate yomam same yukta tamomataha. And among all yogis, he who full of faith with his innermost self merged in me, worships me, is according to me the most devout. So among all those tapasvis, jnanis and the karma yogis, yogi is the highest. And among the yogis means math. See, a man person may have a controlled mind because out of maturity, the mind might come under control. Doesn't mean that he's worshiping the Lord. Okay, there are people who don't believe in God and they're very controlled minds. They say there is no God, but the mind is very much under control. So among those who have controlled their mind, Bhagwan is saying, he who is full of faith with his innermost self, means innermost self merged in me, means he knows that there is no difference between me and the Lord. And now he is worshipping me. So Bhagwan is now introducing bhakti. This is the introduction to bhakti, because from chapter 7 onwards, from chapter 7 to 12, 7, 8, yeah, from 7 to 12, it is a description of tat. Chapter 1 to 6 was a description of tvam, of the jiva. That's why the jiva had to be purified. Tvam padam shodhanam, the word shodhanam means purification and the word shodhanam also means discovery. So tvam padam shodhanam, which happened from chapter 1 up till now, is a purification of the self. Self means not the pure self, the individual self, the jiva. And from 7 onwards, we'll start tat padam pada shodhanam. And there it means discovery, because there is nothing to purify in the pure self. In the pure consciousness, there's no need to purify anything. It is very, very pure. And so discovery. So we have to start discovering. And the idea here is up to 6 chapters. When we have purified our mind to a great extent, only then will we be capable of even understanding what the Lord is. And that is why he comes up to 6. He gives 6 chapters. Okay, first forget it. From second, from especially third, fourth, and fifth, it is all about purification of the mind and meditation. And sixth is meditation. And in that seat of meditation, what do I have to discover is being described from chapter 7 to 12. And 12, he will end with this bhakti yoga there. So he's introducing bhakti from here. Therefore, because he's now using the words madgatena, merged in me. Right? Antaratma, Shraddhavan, worships me. Yuktatama, he's the most devout, is my opinion. And so devout, when he brings the word devout, devotion, coming from devotion, he is now introducing topic of devotion. He's introducing, now he's going to talk about himself. Because now he basically says that your mind is now pure enough to understand when I talk about myself. And that's what he'll start from chapter 7. Okay. Om Tat Saditi Srimad Bhagavad Gita Su Upanishad Su Brahma Vidyayam Yoga Shastre Shri Krishna Arjuna Samvade Dhyana Yogo Nama Shashthodhyayaha. As is our mission practice, we chant the first verse of the chapter one again to indicate to us that the studies are not over. It's not like, okay, now I'm finished, let me just put the book away, but that we will be again, studies continue. So the same chapter can be read again. If there are any questions, definitely you can ask them to me later also. I'll read the first verse, and then if anybody has any questions, they can ask.
अथ षष्ठोऽध्यायः श्रीभगवानुवाच अनाश्रितकर्मफलं कार्यं कर्म करोति यः स सन्न्यासी च योगी च न निरग्निर्न चाक्रियः.
Thank you all for staying the additional 15 minutes. I'm glad that I could complete the chapter because it's not a good thing to leave just a few verses for next year. Does anybody have any questions?
Jayaji, I have a question. You were talking about the one who is doing tapas. That is also a way of controlling the mind. And Bhagavan was telling that the one who has done tapas, he is superior. He is also a yogi. But I'm just a little bit confused about that. If a person is just controlling his mind about one thing, just in one area, does that kind of controlling the mind happens in all areas?
No. No. Yeah. That's why when you develop dispassion, that's why I told you, see, dispassion means there is devaluation of everything. Mm. If you can develop that vairagya, that dispassion, then the mind will be controlled in all aspects. It can be. Yeah. But generally, practice in one, you can practice that. But one by how many things you will control like that, yeah. Right? So it is better to practice only one thing, dispassion. Mm. Dispassion can only happen by devaluing everything. That's why I told you that three, charity and tyaga and vairagya, right? Because in charity, the value is maintained. Mm-hmm. In tyaga, one part of it is meant. So in vairagya, both has to be given. If you can develop that, then the mind will become calm. Reading will also help. Reading means this type of reading, spiritual reading, any kind of higher text. That will also help.
Okay.
Pratipaksha bhavana is very strong. Like that will help very much. Thinking of the negative aspects of whatever. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Anybody else? So have a very happy holiday season. I believe it's going to be January 9th. January 1st is a Monday. So the Monday after that, we will start. We will begin our classes if all of you would like to continue. And also, if you can let me know what text you would like to study, then it will give me a chance to prepare. I'm leaving for India on the 23rd of November and I'll be back on the 17th of December. So you can, Ashok, if you can just email me what text and then make sure that everybody has the text in Calgary.
Yes, ma'am.
And then we can continue on with that. Is that okay?
Yes, Sajji.
Okay. So we will meet in the new year now. Okay. Be safe. Have a happy holiday season. Hari Om, everybody. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam.